In Pharaoh's reign, he had a dream. Daniel 2:1, the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, they also had a dream. Today we're going to be looking at the life of Joseph, but this time we're going to be comparing it to Daniel. They're very similar. It's actually kind of scary how similar they are, like just with that second reign of both the kings. They both had a dream. It's very interesting. But it goes more than that. I went on a little bit of a rabbit hole to weird, like, psychokinesiology, like, rabbi. That's his name on his, like, website or something. It was really confusing. And I was like, well, that guy's definitely weird. I'm not going there. To other places I went to, and I think I've come up with a theory. I think my first question was, is that, think about this. For instance, there was 300 years, Moses wrote the story of Joseph. There was 300 years before Joseph and Moses. I'm sure in that 300 years there must have been some sort of story. There must have been something amazing that they could have put at the end of Genesis. Why did they put Joseph at the end of Genesis? And I'm starting to formulate that it could be because Joseph really does unlock not only Jesus, but also the end times and Revelation. I'm going to do a separate sermon on just Joseph's dreams next time. Just because his dreams are much more, they have multiple meanings, I think, than just the actual literal meaning. And we'll dive into that a little bit today. But yeah, that is, I mean, it is crazy on not how, you have to think, like, first of all, there's more people in the story of Genesis that are like Christ types, I would say. You have like Adam, he's a Christ type. You also have Abraham, he's a Christ type. But there's just something different about Joseph, in my mind at least. There's just something about him that's way different than Adam or Abraham. And I think personally it has to do with his dreams, not only with his dreams, but his life reflects. You have to think about the two main people in the Bible when it comes to prophecies, and then you have like David. I think he's a main character in the Bible when it comes to thinking about God. And then Jesus, and I think also another really main character in the Bible is Daniel, because he talks about the end of times. And Joseph is almost kind of the key to both of those people. And just a little thing before we even talk about Daniel, I want you to turn in your Bibles to 2 Samuel 13 verse 1, and we're going to see something very interesting. So, what was that? 2, what did I say? 13, verse 1. Almost there. 2 Samuel, by the way. All right. Anan and Tamar. There we go. After this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. Alright, so that's the first part we could see so far setting. We have I'm just going to skip his name. Anyways, Tamar's brother, they're not like blood. They're blood related, but it's more likely it's that David is their father and their mothers are different. It's the same thing with Abraham. Him and his wife have the same father, but their mothers are different, so that's how they're able to marry still. This is the reason why he's kind of thinking like, oh, he's kind of trying to justify wanting to fornicate with her. But then you jump down to verse 11, and this is where we literally see almost verbatim the exact same thing happening with Joseph, and you'll see here exactly what happens. So 13:11. Now when she had brought him to eat, she brought him cakes, he took hold of her and said, "Come lie with me, my sister." But she answered him, "No, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing should be done in Israel. Do not let this disgraceful thing, and I, where I could take my shame, and as for you, you would be like one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." However, he would not hear her voice, and being stronger than she, he forced her and laid with her. Now then her brother hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred within which he hated her was greater than with the love that which he had loved her before. And her brother said to her, "Arise, be gone." So she said to him, "No, indeed, this evil of sending me away is worse than the other that you did to me." But he would not listen to her. Then he called his servants who attended him and said, "Here, put this woman out away from me and bolt the door behind me." Now she had on a robe of many colors. For the king's virgin daughters daughters wore such apparel, and his servant put her on out and bolted the door behind her. Then Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her robe of many colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went away crying bitterly. Now we know what happens to the rest. Absalom comes and kills her brother, and then you have that whole situation with that. But anyways, that's not what I wanted to look at. I wanted to look, she has a robe of many colors, and then she tears it. Where else do we see a robe of many colors getting torn? And not just that, where else do we see somebody trying to force another person to fornicate with them? We see that with Joseph. And we flip our Bibles now to Genesis 38, chapter 11. Kind of interesting, they both are verse 11. But 11, I'm not there yet, man. Shh. Don't interrupt me. All right, 38:11. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law. Wait a second. Oh, wrong one. Oh, no, I messed up everything. Oh, well, hold on. 39:11. There we go. The brain thing. See, I'm young still, but I've misfire every now and then. 39:11. It's actually interesting that one of them is Tamar, though. That's kind of interesting. Anyways, 39:11. But it happened about this time when Joseph went out to the house to do his work, and none of the men were at the... But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men in the house was inside. She caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. So when it was, she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called the men of her house, saying, and spoke to them, "See, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us," him being Potiphar, "to lie with me." And I cried with a loud voice, and it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So we see here that she loved him at some point, but she becomes overturned with hatred, just as Tamar's brother happens, and David. And it's more than that. It's even close to even saying about the door being bolted, he fled outside, whereas Tamar's brother made her flee outside. Now the part here, he doesn't tear his coat. Here is many colors. We actually go back, and we look at verse 37, verse 23. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers, they had stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. They took it and cast him into a pit. The pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down and to eat a meal, and they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of the Ishmaelites coming from the Gilead with their camels bearing spices, palm, myrrh, and the way down to Egypt. So that is just already, we're not even going to be talking about David today, that's going to be further down, but you can see already that just right here, the story of Joseph is much more complex, and there's way more things to it. I want you to keep that in mind when you're looking at the dreams, that you can take the dreams and look at them literally, but there's more to the dreams than what meets the eye, and there's a lot more things that are prophetic about Jesus and also about the end of times and his dreams. Anyways, that is just the kind of the introduction into this. We're actually going to start off and compare the life of Daniel and the life of Joseph now. So, everybody turn in your Bibles with me to Daniel 1, 1 through 9. Daniel 1, 1 through 9. Alright, so these first like two verses, this is more of like a backstory. This doesn't really have anything to do with Joseph at all. But we're going to read it because you kind of need this to get in your head. Like, we already know who Joseph is from last week's sermon, or last time I was here. But now we need to know, who's Daniel? In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judea, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judea, into his hands with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve the king's palace, and to whom they may teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies of wine, which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they may serve before the king. Now, from any among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To those the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. He gave them Daniel, the name of Belteshazzar, Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor the wine which he drank before he requested of the chiefs of the eunuchs that he may not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. Okay, so a little recap on this. We see Nebuchadnezzar is coming in to Judea, and if you look at this on the map, this is when Israel split. So you have northern Israel, and you have Judea on the south, and Judea is supposed to be the gooder side of the northern end, but you can see a lot of times they fell. There's actually reasons why Jacob. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about today. That's a whole different topic. But anyways, what we're going to be looking at is that the king instructed. It says that he carried into the house of Shinar, the house of his god, and he bought the articles and the treasure in the house of his god. And it also talks about he's taking all these people as really they are slaves. Now Daniel and them, they were. I almost equate it to like. Back in the 1600s, if you were a prisoner, but if you were a really high standing, you could have a whole library. You could still eat whatever you wanted. You could still, even if you could bring women in if you wanted, or your wives if you wanted, or your husbands in. It depends on how rich you were, how bad the prison was. It's the same way here, but they're still slaves. They can't just leave and go back to Israel anytime they want. We see almost the exact same thing happen to Joseph. So now what we're going to do is we're going to flip back to Genesis 37, 26 through 27. Genesis 37, 26 through 27. And that says, so Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh, and his brothers listened. So already we can see that Daniel is being taken out of a land that he loves, and he's going to a place. Now there is an interesting parallel that we'll make in a minute, but also Joseph is getting, right now, he's about to be taken out of a place and get into a foreign land as well. And we keep on reading in chapter 39, 1 through 4, we read that now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Now listen, the Lord was with Joseph. It also mentions that the Lord was with Daniel as well. It doesn't say that for word, but you can know that the Lord was with him, especially when he says, but now God had brought Daniel into good favor and goodwill of the chiefs of the eunuchs. It's the same thing here. He's still with Joseph. You can also see how he's being with Daniel, but there's even more than that. So we even see now that and the master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of the house and all that he had put under his authority. So it was from that time he was made overseer of the house of all he had. The Lord blessed in the Egyptian's house for the Lord's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was all that he had in the house in the field. So we can already see like this correlation of, this is what I'm going to make the point to, both of them are taken from lands that they love to a new land. And you're going to later find is they never return to the old land. They always stay there. And it's even the same, we'll talk about this more in David, it's the same for David too. He never moves back to Bethlehem. He stays in Jerusalem when he moves there. He never goes back. It's the same thing for those two. Now, their circumstances are a little bit different than David's. David's circumstances that he's going to be for Saul, and he's going to work with Saul. Whereas these two, it's forced. It wasn't their on control. They were forced to move. Now we go into, they both also have a test. Both of them have a test. If we go to Daniel 1, 8 through 14, let everybody flip back there. We're going to be flipping a lot through Daniel and like Genesis, like chapter 40 around that area. So just keep a bookmark in one and the other because we're going to be flipping back to both of those. So Daniel 1, and that was 8 through 14. But Daniel purposed in his heart, said he would not defile himself with the portions of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested the chief of the eunuchs that he may not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would be endangered my head before the king. So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had sent over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and appearance of the young men who eat the portions of the king's delicacies and as you see fit. So deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. That's not the test. The test to see how healthy they're going to be. That's not the test. The test that was for Daniel and his compadres was to eat of the king's meat and to eat of the king's wine. Because that's what they want to say. You look in verse 4, it says, let's skip down a little bit, whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. They're trying to change them from the Hebrew nobles, and to try to change them into the magicians or the soothsayers or the people of the Babylonians. That's what they're trying to do. And for Daniel to say, like, no, I'm not going to do that, it's pretty tough. Especially when the chief eunuch is like, hey, like, I could die because of this. So that's Daniel's test. We know what Joseph's test is, but let's read it again. And we look verse down in verse 39, verse 7. And it came to pass after all these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And just a little, I have like OCD, I think. Just a little thing in my footnote in my Bible. It always says like when you reference to other things. The connection I got between Tamar with the many colors of coats and Joseph was, I have this little thing where it says Samuel 13:11. So it tells you to read that and how it's similar. That's how I was able to actually do that. But anyways, I'll keep on. That's all we're talking about now. But anyways, and it came to pass after these things that his master's eye caught longing eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he's committed all that he has to my hand. So that's a test. We know what happens. We just read it. She gets a garment. She screams, hey, look what he's just done. He's just lied with me. Potiphar, instead of killing him, and I do think that was God restraining Potiphar from killing him, sends him to jail. Now, there's not much that I can read that really kind of correlates, I think, between the jail and Daniel. The only thing that I was really able to make maybe a similarity is, if you kind of have to skip ahead now, I just remembered this, is that Daniel and Joseph's life, they're similar, but it's like the beginning of his life is kind of similar to the, like, more of the end of Daniel's life, or the end of Daniel's life is kind of similar to the end of Joseph's life is similar to the beginning of Daniel's life. And you kind of have that where they have similar lives with about the time of their ages are kind of different. But anyways, I'll just keep on going. So you're going to see now, we're going to come back to chapter 2, but right now we're skipping that just because the connection I was able to see with the prison and with Daniel is when he refuses to bow down to the golden image. Because they have the same consequences. Lying with Potiphar's wife is a consequence of death. And so is the consequence of not bowing down to the idol there's another consequence with Jesus, but he didn't have a, I'm not going to, he dies, but in a different way. I won't go there right now. But anyways, so if we look, verse 8, Daniel's friends disobey the king. Now, I don't know where Daniel was at the time. He could have been doing something else. It doesn't really say what he wasn't there at the time. We don't know what it was he was doing, but he wasn't there. Anyways, verse 8, so we're looking at Daniel 3, verse 8. Therefore, at the time certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews, they spoke and said to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and I don't even know what that, wow, psaltery? I don't know, I've never heard that music. Anyways, and symphony with all the other kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And there are certain Jews who have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regards to you. They have not served your gods or worshipped the golden image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar... Again, this almost goes back again to Tamar and her brother. Nebuchadnezzar spoke saying, Nebuchadnezzar in rage and fury gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought men before the king. I want to do an old thing on David, but it's just with Tamar is so close to Joseph and Daniel so close to Tamar. When you think, for instance, when you look at Potiphar's wife, she loved him, but then she became very angry. She tore his cloth from him. Other translations of the Bible, you see, it says she tore his cloth from him. In my translation, it says he left it in her hand. Some of them say she tore it from him. Look at Tamar. He became super angry at her more than he loved her, and he bolted her outside of his home. Look at Nebuchadnezzar. He's super angry, and he says, "Hey, let's go and let's throw him into the fiery pit." You look at the Sadducees and the Pharisees. They become angry with Jesus and they plot to kill him. We'll get to that more, but I'm just trying to say they're all connected, and there's a reason for that. And the reason, God hasn't told me what the reason is yet. I see what they're connected, and that's what we're showing. I don't know why they're all connected. I think it has to do with they're showing Jesus' life, but I think there's more than just that. But anyways, let's keep on going. We're going to skip down to verse 19 to the saved and the fiery trial. But Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression of his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. See that? His face changed. Who else's face changed? Tamar's brother's face changed. Potiphar's wife has face changed. I think it's very crazy how similar all of their lives are. And the expression of his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. A little interesting thing about that is that you have the 7 years of pestilence and the 7 years of plenty. I don't know if that's a connection to that at all, but it's kind of interesting. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. And these men were bound in their coats and their trousers and in their turbans and their other garments and were cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed the man who took of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, I think the reason, this is just, again, OCD part, like, thing. I think the reason why they might have lived if they were, like, kind of like used to the fire, if they maybe have gotten like a little closer and a little closer to it. But what they literally did was just get them, run into the fire and throw them into it. The heat, I think, was so overwhelming that they just couldn't keep up with it. And you've seen it sometimes. Your car is nice and AC and you step outside and you're like, whew, it's hot. It's the same thing here, that they just weren't used to the heat of the fire. And I think it was just too much that it actually killed them. Anyways, that has nothing to do with their time bashes. Me thinking of something. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, furnace. And then Nebuchadnezzar, verse 24, then Nebuchadnezzar was so astonished, and he rose and hastened and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? Then they answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see 4 men, loose, walking around in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. How would Nebuchadnezzar know that? You think Nebuchadnezzar is a pagan Chaldean king. How would he know what the Son of God looks like? That almost thinks, this has nothing to do with the Bible. I almost think of when we get to heaven. I read this somewhere. I think somebody said, I can't remember what it was. When we get to heaven, we'll automatically, it was my Bible teacher, that's who it was in my school. When we get to heaven, we'll recognize who Moses is. We'll recognize who Jesus is without ever seeing them because we'll have different bodies. Our memories will be perfect and we'll be able to remember everything. Or we'll be able to know things more than we did before. We'll be able to know who everybody is. And I think almost that's what's happening here. And I think that's what's happening here is that he's noticing who God is, even though he has not seen him, because God's telling him who he is, even if he doesn't notice that. And his fourth is like the Son of God. And then we know they all get out of the fire and Nebuchadnezzar praises God. But there's just such a crazy similarity of Joseph being thrown into prison and, you know, Daniel's body's being thrown into a fiery hell. They're both saved by God. Now, there's two different things that... What just happened? Okay, there we go. The only difference is that Joseph comes out because the cupbearer remembers when Pharaoh has a dream. And then the difference is God protects them. Now, we see... Let's do a little recap real quick because we've just gone through a lot. All right, so Daniel and Joseph, they're both taken out of lands that they love, Israel, Canaan, and they're taken into two pagan countries, Egypt and Babylon. Both of them are the greatest in the world at the time. And I would even say Egypt is still kind of the greatest at the time during Daniel, but not as much as they were during the time of Joseph. They were very powerful then. And the other thing, the time of Joseph was around, I believe it was around the time of the pyramids. That was like the height, the golden years of Egypt. And you also look at the Babylon, the time Daniel was there was the golden years of Babylon itself. So just from a history standpoint, very similar in how they're almost exact and how even the pagan countries they're living in are even close to each other in terms of math, in terms of power, in terms of other things. Then we also see that you have two tests. Now, I think Daniel, his test was, because he's not with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but his test was that he didn't want to eat from the king's meat, from the wine. And that relates to Joseph not wanting to commit adultery with Potiphar's wife. And then his friend's tests, because he also did that, but it's mostly, right, we see, I think, Daniel convinces buddies not to eat it because it says Daniel doesn't say that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't want to defile themselves. It says that Daniel did not want to defile themselves. But then we see this time, we don't know who Daniel was. I don't know, I don't know if Daniel bowed down. I don't think he would. But we don't know where Daniel was during this time of the golden statue. Anyways, their test is much more similar of them being thrown into, instead of a prison, thrown into a fiery furnace. So that's where we are. Now it comes to the crazy blow your brain. I just got my brain blown like 100 times writing this. The dreams. The dreams, and the thing that's kind of cool too is they both have two dreams. Both of them dream two. Both of the Pharaoh and Nebuchadnezzar dream two dreams. The Pharaoh's one is the same dream, but Nebuchadnezzar's, they're two different dreams. So they both dream two dreams. And it both happens in the second year of their reign. Well, it was the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. It was the second year of Joseph and the Pharaoh with being in the prison. So we're going to look now at Daniel 2:1-45, and then we're going to look at 41-36 in Genesis. But everybody turn to Daniel 2:1, and this is again where it shows that we go through how their lives are the same, but just different times in their lives are they the same. Anyways, all right, here we are. 2:1. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the commandment to call all the magicians, all the astrologers, all the sorcerers, all the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, I have a dream. My spirit is anxious to know the dream. The Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. You have to say like them, oh, king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation. Man, what a bunch of liars. Yeah, tell me your dream and we'll interpret it. Yeah, because they're going to tell him whatever he wants to hear. If they were to tell him the dream of the golden head, they would have just said something like, oh, that's you destroying all the inner nations instead of Jesus destroying the other nations. That's what they would have said, something like that, if you would have remembered. And that's why God, I think, really caused his brain to not work, to not, you know, not to remember his dream, because he wanted Daniel to rise up to power. We see the similar thing with Joseph. Anyways, let's keep on reading. They answered and said, let the king, verse 7, let the king tell his servants a dream, and we will give its interpretation. And the king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time, because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have decreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time has changed. Therefore, tell me this dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king, saying, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matters. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler have ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. Actually, they have. That's what Joseph, but they didn't know that. Anyways, for this reason, the king was angry and very furious, and he gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Now, what happens? We see that Daniel reveals his dream, and we look at verse 24. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy all the wise men of Babylon, and he went to thus say to them, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king interpretation. Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said to him, I found a man, the captives of Judea. The captives of Judea. Joseph was also a captive, but this time he was a prisoner. Very similar wording. Who will make known the king interpretation? The king answered and said to him, Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known me the dream which I had seen and its interpretation? And Daniel answers in the presence of the king and said, the secret of which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers cannot be declared to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known the king of Nebuchadnezzar what will be the latter days. Also, that's interesting, this is a side note, he says, what will be in the latter days? That wasn't the latter days, we're living in the latter days. And I think that's interesting, because I don't even think Nebuchadnezzar could have understood that. That what we're talking, what he, his dream actually goes to the end of time. And we go down to verse 31. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out of the hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron and clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind came away, so that no trace of them was found, and the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So that's his dream. We come to interpretation that all the heads mean different nations and all that different things. We're not going to talk about that today. Now we're going to be talking about Joseph's dream with Pharaoh. Everybody flip back to your Bibles. Joseph 41:1. Or Genesis 41:1. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. I just wanted to make that interest clear. That Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. Suddenly there came up 7 a river of seven cows, fine-looking and fat. They fed on the meadows, and there, behold, seven other cows came up out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows out of the bank of the river. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the seven fine-looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke, and he slept and dreamed a second dream. So Nebuchadnezzar just dreamed a second dream. But his second dream is when he's become so proudful, and it is the dream of the amazing vineyard that rises up and gets cut down. And that is his own dream when he's in the, I believe, 7 years in the wilderness going around. That's his second dream. Now, Pharaoh had also three dreams, but they were just the same time, around the same area. And the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump full heads. So the Pharaoh woke, and indeed it was a dream. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all of its wise men, and Pharaoh told him his dream. But there was no one who could interpret the dream for Pharaoh, just like there was no one that could interpret the dream for Nebuchadnezzar. No man on earth could do it, besides Joseph, because God was with him. It says that God was with him. It also says that God was with him with Daniel. God was with them. And we go in and we read that the 7 years, right, means the seven plenty, and the 7 years mean the seven of not plenty. That represents the fat cows and the gauntly cows and the plump heads and the not plump heads. So those are just those dreams. Now we get to both get promoted to them. So if we look in Daniel 46, 2, 46 through 49, 2, 46 through 49. There we go. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of lords, and King of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you can reveal this secret." Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts and made him the ruler of the whole province of Babylon. He was the whole. There was nobody above Daniel the Nebuchadnezzar. Now let's flip to Genesis, 41:37 through 46. The advice was so good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants that Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a man in Elohim, the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "And as much as God has showed you all this, there is no one discerning and as wise as you." Just as there was no one as wise as Daniel, it tells us that there was no one as wise as Daniel. "You shall be over my house and over my people and be ruled to according of your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." So we both see they're both in charge. Now there's an awesomely awesome parallel with this. To David, he is the king. The only above greater than David is God. Jesus, he is the king. The only one greater than Jesus is God. Amen. And we can see that these two here, right, they're the greatest. There's only one greater than them. David, there's only one greater than him. Jesus, there's only one greater than him. They're all very similar. And that's why I do think there's a reason to more. There's more than just that these are Christ types and they have the exact same life as Jesus. I think there's more than just that. Again, I don't know what it is, but I'm still trying to figure it out. But there's more to it. There's a reason why God told Moses. There's a reason why God told Moses to put Joseph in the end of Genesis. Because really, I think that Joseph directly connects to Revelation. And we'll learn that more about in our dreams. Everything else is paralleled. I want to talk about one thing because we're running out of time. Even when Daniel, all those people, when he gets cast into the lion's den, all of the people of, Darius, his, friends, they plot against to kill Daniel. The same thing happens with Joseph. His brothers plot against to kill him. There's all these similarities between them. But I want to talk real quick about his dreams, because this is going to be a full separate sermon on just his dreams. But I want to talk about his dreams for just a second. So let's look about his dreams. But just so you guys know, I want to recap real quick before we get into the dreams. The life of Joseph and Daniel, they're like this. The life of David and Jesus, they're like this. The life of Joseph, David, Daniel, and Jesus, they're like this. I don't know why. I know this for some reason. But I'm not sure entirely, at least yet, maybe some of you guys know, I don't know. I'm just a human, I don't know everything. There's some reason, and I know there's a reason why Moses put Joseph at the end of the book of Genesis. Because there is something, and I do think that Joseph ties to Revelation, and we're going to see this right now. Let's go to Genesis 37. We're not going to use the first one, because the first one is, you'll see, I'll show you next time. I don't want to spoil everything. But I want to go down to, where is it? Hold on. There we go, verse 9, 37:9. Then he dreamed, still another dream, and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I've dreamed another thing, and at this time the sun, moon, and the 11 stars have bowed down to me." Now, this dream, I want you to not think it literally, because this dream does not literally happen. His mom dies way before he's second in command in Egypt. He never bows, his father never bows down to him. Actually, he bows down to his father. And there's not even 11 brothers that come with him the first time. Benjamin is back in Canaan. There's another meaning to this dream. And I'm going to let it there for now. A little cliffhanger. But I want you to think about that. One other thing about the dreams is if you look, and this will be more that I do next time, the dreams of Hit, and you even see it because, actually, I want to say this real quick before we finish off. Let's go to Genesis chapter, where is it? Hold on, let me find it. Hold on, where is it? Hold on. Where is, oh no, I feel, oh. Hold on. Joseph said, I can't find it, but there's a verse that says, let me see if I can't. Yeah, there's a verse that says, and Joseph remembered his dreams. That means his dreams had come to fruition. The second one was not how, because even if you look back to 37, verse 10, so he told it to his father and his brothers, and the father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I, your brothers, indeed come and bow down before earth to you?" And his brothers envied, but remember this, but his father kept the matter in his mind. So last time we did this, I said that maybe Jacob had thought he was a little arrogant, but I think he was acting. I think Jacob was acting to keep the peace between the brothers. He rebuked Joseph because he didn't want his brothers to get more angry by him saying, "Oh yeah, your dream may be that." And he kept the matters into his mind because Jacob may have thought maybe there's another meaning to this. Now, I do think the meaning of this dream is actually a time dream of years of Joseph's life. And I don't want to spoil everything on that because it's actually years of his life. The two sons are actually 2 years, 11 stars, 11 years. And you can actually see them being 13 years of his life. I'll spoil a little bit. 2 years of him are in jail. The other 11, I won't spoil for that. You guys can look that up. But we'll also talk about that next time. And also one more thing, the dreams as well, I do also think, actually foretell Jesus coming. Because you have a dream of humbling and a dream of conquering. There's also a line of David and a line of Joseph. The line of David is the conqueror. The line of Joseph is the humbler. That's why most Jews that don't believe Jesus has come, there's going to be two messiahs. But we know Jesus is the humbler and the conqueror. And I think that's some of the reason why Moses put Joseph in the last book of the Bible, because he not only foretells Jesus' first coming, but maybe also even the second coming. But that'll be next time. All right, let's pray. Dear Father in heaven, we know that you hold all of the secrets to all of life's questions, from science to my English test after next week. You know all these things, Lord. And Lord, you know the secret of it is, why did you tell Moses to put Joseph in the beginning? What correlation does he have with Jesus? You know all these things. You're the one who wrote this. You're the one who thought of this. You knew all these things before they even happened, Lord. And Lord, thank you today for showing us just a little bit of revealing some of these secrets to us, Lord, and the many more that hopefully you reveal to us. Please, Lord, be with Len, and please be with Barbara, Lord, during this time. It's very hard for them, Lord. And Lord, we do know that one day we will see them and they are like sleeping and they are very peaceful now. All of the troubles of the earth will not affect them any longer. And the next eye they'll see is you when they come up to the clouds to meet you, Lord. And Lord, please keep the devil away from us, Lord, and bring your angels into every one of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. All right.